I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about how many and what kinds of people we need to make communities safe. We're going to talk about police staffing. We're going to talk about the challenges involved. We're going to talk about costs. And we're going to talk about needs. My guests today will include Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry and Melissa Prophet Reese of the Indy Public Safety Foundation. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about police staffing. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits at WFYI.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry. Terry, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
It's good having you here. I know the last time you were here, my then-guest host, Eric Bradner, was in the seat, so it's good to finally be able to talk with you. And Melissa Prophet Reese, who is with the Indy Public Safety Foundation. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have both of you here. Well, I'm going to start. You know, this is one of those subjects that can become a lightning rod in a hurry. So, and the theme of this show always is we want to generate more light than heat. So that people come away understanding things. I want to start first by talking about, are there standards for what's considered, you know, a proper level of police staffing for a metropolitan community like Indianapolis? Terry?
I'm not sure that it's fair to say that there are standards as such, but there's certainly a basis of comparison in terms of you know, what comparable size cities have in terms of their force. You know, first of all, to state the obvious, our opinion is that we are woefully understaffed at the moment here in Indianapolis. And sort of one of the ways to measure that is, actually I believe both Director Riggs and the FOP representatives at the budget hearing last night talked about this very thing, that we're sort of an unusual situation, that we're one of the largest urban policing areas in terms of geography. In fact, it's geographically larger than Chicago or Denver, but significantly smaller police force to patrol that large of an area. One measure of comparison is comparing the average number of officers for the top 50 cities in population ranges from 2.2 officers per 1,000 residents to 2.4 officers per 1,000 residents. Indianapolis at this point is 1.9 officers per 1,000 residents, and so in terms of where we are understaffed, there are different numbers that have been mentioned. Using that criteria alone, we would have to grow the police force by almost 480 officers to reach that comparable staffing. And clearly, there's been estimates as much as that we're understaffed by 700 officers to as little as 200 officers. Bottom line, simple, we're clearly understaffed at this point.
You mentioned that there, you know, you use the comparison of Denver and Chicago as, you know, being larger cities with smaller. Does geography play into the calculations at all, too? The size of the area you have to cover, or is it purely population based?
No, clearly the area, you know, in terms of what you have to cover, obviously, if we're going to have patrols, if we're going to have traffic enforcement, you know, we have to have sufficient personnel to cover the geographic area that makes up our metropolitan area.
Melissa, in terms of staffing, are there standards that at least you are working with that you think are appropriate targets or ways that we should judge the city's performance by?
Well, it's my understanding in talking with Public Safety Director Troy Riggs and Chief Height that the number being thrown out of 2.5 officers per 1,000 residents is a 20-year-old staffing number that has been applied across the board, regardless of whether you're talking about New York City or Anderson, Indiana. And as a result, those numbers are not accurately reflective of the needs. Now, I do believe that both Chief Height and Public Safety Director Troy Riggs believe we do need more officers on the street, but I think they respectfully disagree with the formula that's being thrown out as the appropriate formula to determine the appropriate staffing. And in fact, it's my understanding that the police department just did a similar study looking at similar cities to Indianapolis specifically with regard to geographic location and span, and have found that we are right in the mix of what other cities are doing with regard to staffing.
You say what comparable cities are you looking at? I mean, what's the basis of comparison?
I'm not sure of the exact cities they looked at. I just got this information last night with regard to the presentation to the council. But they had indicated it was comparable cities.
Okay, so do we agree between the two of you that do we agree on that number of 1.9 right now, that 1.9 per 1,000?
No, I would say that probably we don't agree on that, whether that is the appropriate or correct formula.
Whether that's the correct number. Right.
And if you look at that, if you're
well,
looking
what number,
at...
What number are you working with, Melissa?
Well, they... The thought is that this formula just doesn't work at all. Mm-hmm. And if you played out the numbers where we're either 700 or 500 short mm-hmm. in terms of officers, you're talking about anywhere from $62 to $80 million to try mm-hmm. to close that gap. Well, even if those numbers were correct, which they don't believe that mm-hmm. they are, that's not realistic or attainable.
Well, and I don't think anyone's suggesting that it's realistic to achieve that number anytime in the near future, but I think it's just intended more to illustrate kind of where we are in terms of relationship. And the 1.9 is not intended to be a goal or a model. That's where we are.
Are we even agreeing on the same starting point here for this conversation? I mean,
yeah,
I that, guess that's where that's, where I was
that's,
going,
that's
Melissa.
That's merely a matter of division between the current staffing, which we currently have 1,546 sworn officers as of yesterday, I believe, and apply that to the population. And so... I don't disagree with Melissa that it's not realistic to talk about, and that the number that we need is subject to debate. But clearly, as recognized by Director Reed's presentation last night, we need more officers now.
I agree with that.
Melissa. No, I very much agree with that.
We disagree about the number.
That
we have.
Right. Well, and if I could, please. I mean, the troubling aspect of the public discussion to date was that there was no plan in sight until perhaps a class at year-end 2014. So if we are at critical levels now, as we believe in the Marion County Prosecutor's Office, we're at critical levels, the even more frightening is where we're going to be over the next year and a half. And so I agree completely with Director Riggs, and that was been our point for a month, going back to the letter that we sent to Mayor Ballard, is, you know, we need to address this situation right now.
We are talking about police staffing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us at Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've got a basic agreement that we need more officers here. What, Terry, you'd mentioned that we're already at critical levels. Just so we establish this, what do you see as the cost and consequences of having an understaffed police force?
Well, and we feel that at the prosecutor's office, we have a front row seat the implications of understaffing. And that can manifest itself in any number of ways. We see it just in something that perhaps seems meaningless, but it's not, in terms of traffic enforcement, because you know we track the tickets that are being written, and clearly given the staffing situation that the police department have, they've had to make traffic less of a priority. So number of traffic tickets down, corresponding accidents are up, fatalities are up. In our office, if it becomes necessary because they need to move a detective out of domestic violence to somewhere else, we see the impact in terms of the quality of cases that are coming to our office. And so we see it now. We've seen it for the last few weeks, and that's what it literally prompted me to speak out recently on this subject. But again, at the risk of sounding a broken record, if we're in this situation now and we don't start addressing it immediately, then where are we going to be by the end of 2014?
What do you see, Melissa, as the cost and consequences?
Well, I think it's important for folks to understand what Public Safety Director Riggs is doing and the steps he's taking and the order in which he's taking those steps. First, before he was going to talk specifically about the need for more policemen and what those numbers would be and what the costs would be, he indicated that it was going to be very important for him to ensure that the police department was as efficient as it possibly could be. And he developed numerous efficiency teams and tasked numerous individuals within the police department to bring back information, data, and budgets, which really had not been done before. He determined that there was definitely a shortfall of police officers necessary. But before he went out and asked either the council or anyone else for money or revenue to provide for that additional staffing, he wanted to find out what he had in his house to begin with. So then what he has done is he has repurposed over 100 officers back to specific zones to be assigned to specific zones and taken certain civilians and put them back, hired civilians in places where you would normally have police officers. So this repurposing of officers back to assigned zones, the hiring of civilians to take the place of certain police officers at 40% of the cost of pay and benefits is part of his plan to try to right-size the force. Now that that has been done, and he's planning to do that into 2014, he is now coming out with specific numbers of what he thinks we need in terms of hires. And it's my understanding he is proposing to hire 50 officers by 2014 and 50 more by 2015.
So we'd be looking at 100 additional now. Are those 100 additional officers or 100 additional positions, meaning that, you know,
it's
presumably
100...
some people are going to be retiring or leaving the force for other reasons. During that time, we're talking about adding 100 different officer positions.
You're exactly right. And 100, given the normal attrition, 100 new officers, two recruit classes, would essentially keep us where we are at the moment. And I guess I would, you know, maybe I'm changing the focus of the conversation a little bit, because I think it leads into Melissa's specific role here, is that, you know, I don't want to suggest, and we've never suggested, that merely finding the funds to pay additional officers is the solution in and of itself. Clearly, you know, what we've talked about on behalf of our office is can we, and Chief Hyde has talked about this as well, is can we find a way to have a more countywide policing model? And by that I mean, how can we better utilize the excluded towns and cities and their police departments, Speedway, Beach Grove, Lawrence, and bring them in a more collaborative approach to policing? From our perspective, you know, we've advocated discussions about how the Marion County Sheriff's Department can supplement IMPD. And one thing that I've advocated for some time and absolutely applaud Director Riggs in doing is forming the public foundation that I believe Melissa is the chair of the board of.
And what does the foundation do? That's a cue for you, Melissa.
Well, no, the whole point of the foundation is to provide funds and in-kind support to the public safety individuals within police, fire, EMS, animal control, to fund the gap of what you cannot receive through either federal, state, or local dollars or grants. So there is a tremendous amount of training and programs that officers need, and we would love to be able to provide, but the budget isn't there and the funding isn't there. So we're going out into the business community and asking for their time and their talent and their resources and their money to help fund those kinds of initiatives.
And how large, how successful have you been at doing that? How much money have you raised so far?
Well, so far CICF has given us a $100,000 grant to disperse to various programs that we selected with regard to police and fire and all these other public safety initiatives.
And CICF is the Central Indiana Community Foundation.
Correct.
Everyone who does not speak. Not-for-profities here.
In addition, One America is going to be providing a very significant grant to us. Can't announce the amount publicly because it hasn't gone completely through their foundation, but that's on the heels. And we've got several $5,000 to $10,000 grants from different individuals. And equally important, we have a tremendous amount of business leaders in our community that are volunteering their time and talent to this initiative. And if I can give an example, training is a very important part of this. And so a lot of the business leaders are providing training programs for these individuals.
We are talking about police staffing here on No Limits. My guests are Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry and Indy Public Safety Foundation's Melissa Prophet Reese. I am John Krall. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about police staffing today. My guests are Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry and Melissa Prophet Reese, who is with the Indy Public Safety Foundation. Jeremy, welcome to the program.
I'm here.
Hi, Jeremy. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Marion County Sheriff's Department versus the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. It's my understanding that the Marion County Sheriff's Department has increased its staffing levels to where they were at prior to the merger with IMPD. I think this is a misuse of funds by the Sheriff's Department, very much contrary to the merger that went on between IFD and the surrounding fire departments. I believe that was a very efficient merger, but the way I understand it, currently we have two independent policing agencies that are performing almost redundant functions, and it's a waste of money. If the money that the Marion County Sheriff's Department is using to hire these new people went to IMPD, I believe IMPD pays their people better and trains their people better and attracts better law enforcement recruits to the new IMPD.
Jeremy, we'll try to get a response for you. Thank you very much for the call. Well, Terry, you're looking like expectantly. I'll let you take that one first.
Well, and you know, in terms of the first part of Jeremy's question is whether there's more personnel at the Sheriff's Department than there were prior to the merger. I don't think that's true. Certainly, Sheriff Layton and his office could speak to that. But clearly, there's not redundant functions under the merger. In fact, most of the kind of traditional policing personnel of the Sheriff's Department moved over to IMPD. We have officers assigned to our office full-time. Four of them are from IMPD, and three of them started in the Sheriff's Department and became IMPD during the merger. And so from the merger, IMPD obviously has responsibility for traditional policing responsibilities, and the sheriff has specific responsibilities as it relates to the maintenance of the jail and sex offender registry, warrant section, some very specific responsibilities. Going to a point I made earlier is you know, whether we can utilize sheriff personnel in certain discrete functions that would free up IMPD personnel, you know, given the current staffing level.
Well, make a case, though, I think from Jeremy's overarching point here is really, why do we need both? Why do we need a sheriff's department and a police force?
Well, and actually, I mean, to the extent, if you start with the assumption that there are very distinct responsibilities for IMPD and the sheriff's department, actually, given our current situation, it is a savings overall having the sheriff's department be responsible for those responsibilities in IMPD for traditional policing, because sheriff's department personnel are paid less than IMPD police officers, and so You know, I know that's an ongoing debate. There's been a lot of debate about it, and I'm not the person to necessarily defend the mayor's position or the sheriff's position about, you know, whether there's the sheriff's budget exceeds what it needs to be. But clearly, the one aspect of Jeremy's question that is incorrect is not redundant functions. They have separate, very discrete functions, all of which are very legitimate functions.
Melissa, is this, though, the most efficient, having both the sheriff's department and police department, the most efficient way we can provide for public safety?
Well, I think the idea between any merger is that you would gain efficiencies and that budgets would be reduced and that staffing would be reduced. If they were doing completely separate functions, then you wouldn't merge the two. So I think there's probably some definite legitimacy to the need to reduce the budget and reduce staffing.
We are talking about police staffing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do as a listener named Lolita did. You can connect with us via Twitter at WFYI. I'm not sure which one of you this is directed to, but it says, tell your guest, I'm ignoring your facts because I don't like them, is infuriating and cheap. I'm not sure which one of you that is directed to, but the facts, the only facts we seem to have in dispute here, right, were whether 2.5 or 2.2 or 2.4 was the target, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the facts are, but I mean I think what we can all agree on is that our police department. Here are the facts I think that are indisputable. Everyone agrees, including Director Riggs, that our department is understaffed at the moment. And if there is not a solution, then in the next year and a half, we're going to be significantly additionally understaffed because of normal attrition, perhaps as much as 100 more officers understaffed by the end of 2014 if we did not get a recruit class in the works. And I guess one of the things we should make clear is that once a recruit class has been put in place and that process begins, it is a year to year and a half process before those recruits are actually up to the point where they're going to be put on the street as full-time sworn officers.
Well, that raises a question. Are there, you know, is the anytime you have a staffing shortfall, it's rare that it's completely across the board. There are certain kinds of people that you need more than others. I mean, where are we being pinched the most by being understaffed, Melissa?
Well, it's my understanding that there's a real need and a desire on all the parties' parts to get more police officers out on the street, in their zones, on the street, doing their day-to-day neighborhood patrolling and monitoring of crime. So what the desire is to get those individuals, those officers that have that talent, out on the streets and then fill in where those officers were doing desk jobs or doing community meetings or other meetings and fill those slots with either civilians or individuals close to retirement, sort of a rejiggling of the existing talent and make sure we've got the right people at the right place.
Terry, where do you see the places where we get pinched the most?
Yeah, I would agree in general terms that the IMPD is essentially divided into two large divisions. I don't know if that's the term they use. We've got operations on the one side and investigations on the other. Operations is the individuals who are out there on a day-to-day basis patrolling, that sort of thing. And clearly that's where we are suffering the most. I think the department's made every effort to make sure investigations, which would include homicides and robberies and drugs, that they continue to try to keep those units staffed, although our belief is that they're suffering as well. But the biggest problem is out on the street. And I'd like to make a point along that line in that I know Director Riggs, I know Chief Height, I myself, and others all believe 100% in a community policing model. And given our understaffing, it is virtually impossible to implement a community policing model when our officers who are on the street, that all they can do is respond to the daily routine runs, then it becomes impossible for the officers to be out in the neighborhood interacting and developing those relationships that are going to lead to a better communication between any given neighborhood and the police.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named AJ, and if you would like to send us a question by email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, politicians feed the anti-tax frenzy and are unwilling to tell people the truth. We need to pay more in taxes. Fewer taxes isn't something to brag about when it results in an increase in crime, decline in the quality in education, and other losses to citizens. I mean, to some degree, let me take the premise, the fact that, that we have to form a foundation to get police officers needed training suggests that perhaps we should be paying more in taxes and stepping up. Is that...
Well, on sort of two points in that regard. The point is not only to provide funding, but it really of this foundation is to integrate in a more thorough way the business community with our police and fire departments so that there's a real genuine understanding of what they bring to the table, what they sacrifice, and what they do for us so that we can leverage the business community's profit and talent and resources to help the police department. And that's I could talk for a long time about how that's already happening with this foundation, which is very positive. In addition, I know that some of the proposals that the council and the mayors are grappling with is to expand the taxing district for IMPD, which will also help the IPS school district, and then also to eliminate the homestead tax credit over a couple of years, which is tax revenue to help fund and pay for this as opposed to borrowing from existing funds. And that is a debate that's been ongoing for, 8 or 9 months about where do we find this money. There's needed new monies that have to come, and the issue is, does it come from taxes or what other places does it come from?
Well, and you'd said earlier in the program, for example, that if we did the, I think it was 700 additional officers, the cost would be somewhere between $62 and $82 million. If we do the 100, I mean, is that proportional where we're looking at an additional, 10 to 15 million then, presumably? If that's the case, that's a pretty big lift for a foundation. I mean, is the argument here really that the public needs to understand these things cost? Terry?
Yeah, I always feel compelled to preface. I've made this point over and over that we as a community have to have this discussion about how we generate the revenue to fund public safety. And I always preface it with the acknowledgement that it's easy for me to say because I'm not on the council, I'm not the mayor, and so I don't have to ultimately make that call.
You don't have to vote on the budget.
But on the other hand, I think, and I think AJ makes the point, is that I think if we have an open and frank conversation, the public will understand the necessity and that we do that. And so I'm not suggesting that any particular revenue source is the answer, but clearly, in order to fund public safety, we can't continue to do what we've been doing. And that not only applies to public safety, that applies to city, county government in general. We managed through various mechanisms this year to provide a 3% cost of living adjustment to the approximately 400 employees in Marion County Prosecutor's Office. Prior to this year, the people in our office who work for less than they can make in the public event had not had a raise in 4 years. And so, the discussion actually goes well beyond just how we employ more police officers. I think we need to recognize that property tax caps and all these things may have sounded good, but at some point we have to fund fundamental governmental services, including our police department.
We are talking about police staffing here on No Limits. My guests are Terry Curry, who is the Marion County Prosecutor, and Melissa Prophet-Reese with Indy Public Safety Foundation. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Roger, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I'll lay out a scenario as brief as I can. And I agree with most everything that's been said, but there was a training situation that's just dying to take place. I'll describe the community as Northwest Indiana. I'm a diabetic. I have been for 32 years, and four of the local police department's finest showed up when I needed help. my wife called. Unfortunately, these officers, one of them in particular, needed training as to how to handle a diabetic. I wasn't a drunk. I've never been a drunk. But I refused their offer of orange juice because I'm diabetic, and I was confused. In my confusion, I knew that there were grapes or there was bread in the refrigerator, and that would slowly raise my blood sugar. Orange juice will spike my blood sugar. Well, the bottom line was, I was a threat to these four officers. They handcuffed me, and I wound up in the ER. Fortunately, and believe me, I'm being sincerely respectful of these officers. They just need training. The ER doctor, he wasn't a doctor, he was a DO. The DO says, why is this guy in handcuffs? He got me out there. I sat there for 4 hours filling out all the paperwork, entertaining everybody with stories of my family. And anyways, there's a yes, you need more officers. Yes, they need more money. But believe me, there's some officers that need some training on how to handle a diabetic.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for the call, Roger.
You're welcome.
Yeah, short answer is I would agree completely. And actually, we've had an incident in Marion County, I don't know if it's been a year or two ago, where an individual who actually was epileptic was mistaken as having being intoxicated. But I do believe that that is part of the training now at IMPD in terms of the ability to recognize, and they're actually specialized officers who are then called to the scene if the the individual officer recognizes the situation, such as Rogers.
Is that, you know, in some ways when we do conversations such as this, when we're talking about understaffing and all of that, almost always boil down to numbers, when in reality the challenge is always more complicated than that, too. It's about finding the right kind of officers, also figuring out ways to pay for the right kinds of training for them. I mean, are we investing enough in the training of the officers that we are preparing now and are going to send out? Melissa?
Yeah, I think the belief is we can definitely be doing more. And in fact, there was a long discussion about some, just let's look at the level of supervisory training, which is very different than what this caller's presented, but just general supervisory training. We could throw $50,000 at one class and provide the adequate training to them, or could create our own training program here within Indianapolis to not only train our officers, but other officers from around competing states. And so the desire for the foundation is that we create top-notch training programs with regard to all different types of training for police officers so that can be funded and we have more quality patrolling as well.
I've gotten an email question from a listener named Bill, and if you want to send us an email with a question, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. Says, to what extent can the understaffing problems be mitigated by a change in enforcement priorities? That is, a focus away from less serious crimes, such as speeding and misdemeanor drug possession, and a focus on more serious issues, such as homicides. Terry?
Well, clearly that could be a solution. I don't think it's an appropriate solution. And one of the things that becomes clear when you work in the Marion County Prosecutor's Office is that everyone knows about the things that hit page one of the Indianapolis Star, you know, whether it's homicides or that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the sort of low-level crime is just as much an issue for the community as those spectacular crimes. You know, if you've got prostitution in your neighborhood, if you've got public drunkenness, that impacts the quality of life in your neighborhood, and it's just as important in terms of addressing those as the major crimes, and particularly as it relates to what I alluded to before, which is a community policing model, is the ability to go into the neighborhood and address those even minor problems, what we would generally perceive as minor problems, just as much as the violent crime. And,
well,
and I can't emphasize enough that in terms of the the quality of life issues that anyone have in any given neighborhood includes exactly those sort of things.
I would agree completely.
We are talking about police staffing here on No Limits. My guests are Terry Curry, who is Marion County Prosecutor, and Melissa Prophet-Reese with Indy Public Safety Foundation. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about police staffing. My guests are Terry Curry, who is Marion County Prosecutor, and Melissa Prophet-Reese with the Indy Public Safety Foundation. We also have a caller on the line whose name also is Terry, so I don't want the two of you to get confused. Terry, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, John, and hi to your guests. Interesting program today.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, as a taxpayer, I don't understand, and the media has reported this, I think the mayor should authorize at least recruit classes and recruitment for the officers that retire or leave. And second, the media has reported that of the 1,500 or 1,600 authorized positions that they have, nearly half are on desk jobs or special assignment. And I think the director mentioned that it was in the paper this morning to hire more civilians for support staff and put these police back out. But this has gone on for years, and we just cannot afford to keep hiring police when half the department's not in patrol, they're on desk jobs. And that's my thoughts on it.
Great. Thanks very much for the call, Terry.
Thank you.
Melissa, that was the point you were making, that some of this process also is reallocating.
Right. First of all, I do think that the proposals here is to replace those who are retiring, because a fair amount of the folks that are retiring are the desk jobs, are the people that are candidly at times less effective. But then also, these numbers do take into account those retirements. And I think there's a disagreement on the level of retirements that are actually occurring each year based upon historical numbers. And I think some of the early numbers were inflated because of the merger and because of some pay increases that were provided. But that being said, I think there's genuine agreement that there needs to be an increase of the number of individuals that are out on the street in the zones. It's my understanding currently that the numbers are around 33%. And I know that with some of these changes, 39%, I'm sorry, and with some of the changes that are going to take place, it's going to go up to 45%, but Chief Hype wants 55%. So I think there is an alignment of
so
the desire.
So just so
to
we're clear, is that 45% and 55% right now of current staffing levels, or, you know, if there's a commitment to add these 100 positions, and I realize we've had some discussion, would it be 55% of what we have now plus 100?
The current numbers
and I realize
is
this
the
is
current,
an awful lot of math out no, there for the, our listeners. Please bear with us.
The current number is 39%. The proposals in place from the mayor would take it to 45%.
Of existing staff.
Of existing staff. With the addition of these existing numbers that are being proposed by Public Safety Director Riggs.
Okay, so he's talking about moving 6% of the people who are currently doing desk jobs over, well, actually, since it's,
and
the math is far too complicated here.
But the number of, the percentage of officers that are out on the street, and that still is not where they want it to be, both Chief Height and Public Safety Director Riggs, they want it to be up to a 55% number. So I think everyone is in agreement that there is not enough police officers out on the street.
Terry, is part of the problem here, I mean, it sounds like we are still operating with, to some degree, police staffing models, the same ones that we've had for 50 or 60 years, maybe even longer, is that we needed a new model and a new approach to solving these problems.
Well, and I don't think that it's necessarily correct to assume that, that there's X number of police officers who are doing desk jobs and thus doing nothing. You know, they're essentially most of the officers are, again, divided into one of two units. They're either in investigations or in the operations. And if they're investigations, they may not be out on patrol, but they're homicide detectives, they're robbery detectives, they're narcotics detectives. And I think some of the type of functions that Director Riggs anticipates could be assumed by civilians are things like analyst, crime analyst, that sort of things. And so, you know, arguably that would be individuals who have, quote, desk jobs, but they're important functions in the context.
And they require specific law enforcement training. Rather
in the
than
context of policing, correct.
Right, right.
We are talking about police staffing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Got an email from a listener named Tom who says, please ask your guests to discuss how the IMPD reserves fit into the staffing and funding strategy. What is the current number of reserve officers? And will likely funding decisions cause that number to go up or down in the next 3 years? I'll start with you, Terry, and then go to Melissa on that one.
I do not know the answer to that question in terms of the number of reserves. My understanding is that reserves are essentially limited in their functions to helping for security at big events, that sort of thing, traffic control. But in terms of the numbers, I honestly do not know.
Melissa. Yeah. Gotten another email from a listener named Sharita who says, I live in Midtown Indianapolis in Meridian Kessler neighborhood, and I would just like to say quality trumps quantity. We need quality police, not more that are permitted to further corrupt the city and pollute our communities with guns and drugs. I see too many pulled over talking or napping in parking lots, totally overweight, never see them out walking a beat or connecting with community unless there is an event. Not all officers, but come on, these are trained professionals and our children are killing each other, and the excuse is not enough manpower. Sorry, I don't buy it. And the prosecutor's office should be ashamed for the permission they have given violent and sex offending criminals to abuse and degrade our daughters. Well, I think both of you have some room there that you can respond to. I'll let you, since the last one was, I think, a shot at your office, Terry, I'll let you.
Well, obviously, I don't know if there's some specific instance that the listener is referring to, but certainly we do not give permission to anyone to abuse anyone's daughters, and we take sex crimes very, very seriously and have an entire division of the office that's devoted to crimes, sex crimes against women and crimes against children.
Go ahead.
And in terms of the police officers and walking a beat, I couldn't agree more that we need police officers out with the ability to walk beat. They can't do that right now because the zones that they're patrolling are so widespread, there are just not enough officers to be able to get out and as I said, implement a community policing model. I went on a ride along about 2 months ago, middle shift, uh-huh. East District, 42nd Post. That is one of the highest crime areas in the city. There were four officers there on that middle shift to patrol a wide, wide, multi-block area in the city, and it speaks to it. And I guess one last point is, you know, in terms of young people killing each other, I could not be any more distraught about it than the listener. I see it every single day. Every single one of those cases comes across our desk, and I agree with her that more policing in and of itself is not the answer, there are issues related to education, job opportunity, all of those things are part and parcel of any ultimate solution. So I agree
with
her.
What's the appropriate – I'll take a step back from the question here. What is – if you see something that doesn't rise to the level of police misconduct where you got a police officer violating the law, but instead is something like, you know, not performing your job, sleeping in a car or whatever. Is there a way that should be reported? Is there a mechanism, Melissa?
Yeah, I'm fairly confident there are police hotlines. And trust me, Chief Height and Troy Riggs would very much like to have any kind of feedback in that regard. They are very proud of their police officers, and not everybody is perfect, just like in any organization. A lot of these officers are doing amazing things every single day, putting their lives on the line and putting themselves in very dangerous positions. And under pretty tedious circumstances with not a lot of pay, in fact, the divorce rate for police officers is the highest of any profession, 85%. They're under a tremendous amount of stress. Now, that does not allow certain kinds of conduct or behavior, but the idea is that they do want to know about these kinds of incidents, and they do want them reported.
We are talking about police staffing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. James, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a comment, a way they could probably save a lot of money really fast. A lot of the officers, sheriff and NIMPD, not only lived out of the county, but lived out of the county for a number of years. They can live between one and two counties away. And I don't think we should be paying for their gas. I think if they want to live in Marion County, they should be able to take their car home, but we shouldn't be providing transportation. Not only that, but they're running up major miles on those cars, and it means they got to have car center. And it's in the millions. And if they would have been doing it, probably wouldn't be short any money right now.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, James. Terry or Melissa, either one?
First of all, and I am not 100% sure of this, I don't believe that officers who live out of the county are allowed to take home cars for both the Sheriff's Department and IMPD. That's my understanding.
And I think I'm in agreement with that, and I also think that there is a proposal to reduce the amount of mileage that is paid for certain other events and times where they're getting mileage. That's one of it's. They're doing the hybrid vehicles, mm-hmm. and they're also cutting back on mileage reimbursement in the key proposals that are out there. That's my understanding.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We are talking about police staffing here on No Limits. Joe, welcome to the program.
Yes, I was got a question. I was wondering, whatever happened to that sheriff-IMPD merger, right? I just don't know what's going on because in my neighborhood, I see people getting pulled over by the sheriff's department, but I thought they don't do that anymore.
We talked about that a little earlier, but Terry, thanks very much for the call, Joe.
Yeah. First of all, obviously, as we talked earlier, they're under the merger, they're very specified responsibilities for IMPD on the one hand, Sheriff's Department on the other. The Sheriff's Department deputies are sworn police officers, and therefore, if they see a crime, just like any other police officer, they have the ability to make an arrest. And you are correct that as they observe any traffic violation, they do have the ability to write that ticket.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Channing who says, specifically, I'm wondering about marijuana interdiction. Many cities have placed marijuana interdiction at the lowest policing priority. For instance, it will amount to dozens of police hours to investigate and arrest a small marijuana grow room that will end in a misdemeanor prosecution. Talk about that, please, Terry. A lot of these are coming your way.
And I'm sorry, could you kind of summarize
that
question?
Well, basically,
again?
He said, do we spend too much time doing marijuana interdiction, that we throw a lot of hours at that, and it just results in a misdemeanor prosecution?
Well, first of all, like any crime, our responsibility as the prosecutor is to enforce the crimes as mandated by the legislature. And from our perspective, any sort of low-level drug dealing, possession, we attempt to divert those cases through what's called drug treatment court. So in the absence of any significant criminal history, most of those types of offenses go through the drug treatment court, Judge Salinas, where essentially it's a diversion program. If the individual successfully completes a pretty rigorous program, the case is dismissed. And so our emphasis is upon, you know, major drug dealing, whether that's marijuana, whether it's heroin, whether it's cocaine, or any of those.
Well, and we probably should note that that's been subject of some discussion at the legislature too about whether our current drug
laws
make
sense. That's correct. And as the proposed revision of the criminal code, it will change those weights at which triggers more serious offenses, particularly under marijuana.
Don, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a comment. I own a car service here in Indianapolis, and I've noticed that I drive around the city all day long, and one of the biggest issues I have with the police department, and trust me, I uphold police officers in the highest regard, as well as firemen in our military. But one thing that I notice constantly while I drive around the city is I see a lot of IMPD police vehicles with people driving them in street clothes, and probably their wife or even kids in the car that act like laws don't apply to them when it comes to speed limits and such. And, we talk about a police force that has a lot of issues with their public image as it is, and yet we've got police officers driving around their vehicles that don't even uphold the laws themselves. I mean, this is not a case of somebody being in a hurry or rushing to a crime scene. This is a case of somebody being in, civilian clothes with, their wife and or kids in the car, and yet they're not even upholding their own speed limits.
Thanks very much for the call, Don. Well, that issue, basically, is it like being a public official that when you're in a car like that, you are, your actions are subject to that sort of public scrutiny?
Certainly, and I think, obviously we interact with the police department every single day, and so I think most of the officers are cognizant of their public image and act appropriately. It goes back to the other question from the woman with the question earlier. I think, if you observe a police officer you think doing something inappropriately, then let the police department know about it.
I would agree completely. I mean, they need that feedback, and it's not appropriate. They're not above the law, and I think that kind of behavior is something that the department would like to minimize as much as possible.
Well, let me give you almost omnipotent powers here. We're getting close to the end of the discussion, the end of the hour here. Give each one of you a chance. In terms of police staffing, if I made you omnipotent for a day, if I had that kind of power, and asked you to make an immediate impact and solve this problem, how would you do it, Melissa? Where would you start?
Well, I think that we need, there's just no question that to a degree we need to agree on the numbers, but I think more importantly we need to agree on a mechanism to get the funding to meet reasonable numbers. I am confident that we have the talent and the ability to agree on appropriate staffing numbers. I don't think we're there right now, but I really believe that all the parties have best interests at heart, whether it's city, county council, whether it's the mayor, whether it's Riggs, the list goes on and on, Terry, and I think we can get to the right numbers. The key is how do we best fund this and come up with the monies? And there's a lot of different proposals that are floating around, and I just hope that for all parties, politics don't play the game in terms of deciding whether something is decided or not, but that we all come together, understand that this is a bipartisan issue and a concern, and it's important to our community that we come up with a solution on the funding.
Terry, you get the last word, but it can only take about 15 seconds.
No, I agree. And I think in particular, I have a great working relationship with Director Riggs. I feel like that if we continue to have this conversation as a community, that the community can buy in and we can reach a solution where we address the problem we find right now.
That'll have to be the last word. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.